How many of you joined? He joined twice.
Yes.
And you also joined twice.
I joined once, but
SRBI, my spelling.
And then you joined? What's your name?
Neha.
Neha joined. And only three people joined actually. What about the rest of you? You don't have what?
Net
is not working in the hostel.
Okay.
In the institute, you are allowed to stay after the classes, right?
Yeah, you are very tired probably night or like.
You come back. Work there.
So we got time in between the period.
We didn't know where to write there. At the bottom it is written comments. Only there we have read.
Okay. Well, there are so many places. So I'll after the class I'll tell you a little more about it. Okay. So let's get on to this. Okay. So anyway, first log in, create your accounts. Okay. This is something we will do a little later. Now. Okay. Who solved the problem? Any of you solve the problem? Yes.
Analytical.
No, I mean, no. What is it?
Just because we can divide any of the substance into the basic particles, so it is basically the analysis of the substance into smaller.
Then you can say theory of atoms.
Basic particle atoms.
Okay.
Classification.
Theory of unification. Basically, we are taking only one thing.
No, I don't want names of the theories. I want the substance of the theory.
Substance. Substance.
What you see, I gave you the problem and I gave you for your construction only two things. I gave you space. I gave you any one thing in any large quantity. Disintegration of matter. How will that solve the problem? So, for example, how will you produce water from it? How will you produce earth from it? How will you produce fire from it?
Basic thing is made of some other thing, the real thing. That is only the apparent thing which you are seeing. So, the real thing in turn can exist in some other form also. So, from this water we can get air, all other things.
How will you get? So, okay, fine. So, you want to fix onto water, let us say.
Okay.
Okay. Now, I gave you water.
Okay.
Plenty of it.
Yeah.
And I gave you space.
Okay.
Okay, now, tell me, how will I get earth?
We cannot actually get.
So, then, but I want earth.
But how can you get earth?
I can. That's the whole point. Yeah, tell me.
You
don't have any fire.
No. He says something. Tell me.
Cooling. Without fire we can't get, sir.
Without fire, that's the question. With cooling. Fire we can get air.
He said two things. Okay. First he said that water can become solid, that is earth, by making it an ice.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now he says, no, but, you know, because he stuck with the idea, but for that I need fire.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Anybody else? But I didn't give you fire. I gave you space.
So reduce the space. Very much.
Hmm?
Reduce the space such that there is no one thing which can't be reduced. Only one particle. So
I gave you plenty of those particles.
Sir,
whatever.
Sir, the water. Keep the water in some space. Mm-hmm. There is a space which the water is occupying.
Mm-hmm.
As we compress it, we might get.
Okay. So what he's saying is, compress water.
Yeah.
And when you compress water, what do you get?
Exactly, sometimes you may get.
You may get?
Sir, water kept in vacuum will give us air.
Yeah. If you put water in, like put it in vacuum,
in
what will happen? So during that process, what's happening?
Expansion.
So he said compression.
Expansion.
Is it expansion or
evaporation?
Expansion is not the correct opposite of compression. Say that a little loudly.
Rare fraction, something like
that. Say it more slowly and loudly.
Rare fraction.
And the other one?
Compression.
Compression. And that is the theory of Anaximenes. His theory is called the theory of compressions and rarefactions. So, that is what it is. So you see, you solved it. So you are as good as Anaximenes. So, what he wanted, so now let us formulate the theory a little more clearly. So let there be some substance, call it X, Y, whatever, doesn't matter. And now, so let's say this is one pinch of that substance, this is another pinch of that substance. And when these two pinches come together, that will create a kind of a densest thing of that substance, whatever that substance be. And then you call it the most dense substance. And what is the most dense of all the four elements that we have?
Earth.
So earth is produced when the things are together much more closely. And then they're a little more separated, you get water. They're a little more separated, you get air. And they're very too far, you get fire. So fire is the most rarefied of the same thing.
If we start with fire,
look here, that is his explanation. Okay, so that's how he conceived fire. He conceived fire as just nothing but the same substance. The only thing that is there is that the same substance that is there in fire is also there in water. The same substance that is there in water is also there in earth. The same substance that is there in earth is also there in the air. So the only thing that differentiates all these things is how far apart the basic substance is.
So then how did it see a different waters? Different waters, how did
they go? Those things you get by combinations. Okay. Once you have produced the basic substances, then you can combine different things in different ways, because there can be different rates of compression, different degrees of compression, right? And that's how you can get all the variety. Now, what is the beauty of this model? One of the interesting things about the beauty of this model is that the appearances that you have about the whole world, they come because of different impacts that it can generate on your senses. What he is trying to do here is, substance is not so important for us, but how far apart they are. So here you have the concept of what is called density. Now, what is interesting about the density? There is one property called density, and that property itself can give you a scale for the whole universe. In his conception, there is only one thing that you want to measure in the whole thing. What is that you are measuring? You are measuring only density. So it can be from 0 to infinity or whatever, or maybe from 0 to 1. Okay, let's say the most dense is the 1 and the least dense is 0. Then all substances are between 0 and 1. Alright? So in that kind of a model, everything is measurable. And he produced one single scale. Now, whether he succeeded in this theory or not, that's not the most important thing. What is important is the character of that kind of a theory is very important for producing any kind of quantitative science. If you want to have a quantitative science, you need to have that kind of dimension, that kind of scale. So if you don't have that kind of a scale, you can't measure anything. There is another interesting character of his theory, and that is the interesting aspect about, that's also one of the things that he made, apart from apparent and real, he also made a distinction between form and substance. So keep in mind this, we'll keep on repeatedly hearing about this. Now what is the meaning of form and substance? What is the what is this new thing about?
Form is the shape.
Not necessarily the shape. Form is like, is about the relation between the substances. The form is the relation between the substances. Form is not the substance. That is of course very clear. Form is certainly not substantive. So what is not substantive is also very important for understanding or for developing a theory of this kind. Because when you look at density, you know, what you are looking at is that you are looking at how much in a given area. And when you are looking at it, ultimately what matters is just the kind of thing that you are measuring, like how close they are, how far apart they are. You are not looking at anything else. You are not even asking what is the thing that is close together. And that is completely bracketed out. You are only talking about the form. That is, your focus is on the relation between the things and not the thing itself. The thing itself is a substance. So thing itself is irrelevant. It can be the characterless substance that Anaximander thought about. So let that be the characterless substance. I don't care. So give me a characterless substance. I will produce character by what means? By changing the form between the characterless substance. So just change the relationships. And he thought just the separation and between the things. So all that you have to do is separations and combinations, and how far they are and how close they are. So he has one primary operation, and that is condensation and rarefaction. And since condensation and rarefaction are actually inverse to each other, you can define only one of them and the other need not be defined. That's another advantage of this whole notion. You define whichever is one. How condensed they are, how uncondensed they are. So you can talk in the same way. And the other thing is that having got my four elements, now the rest of the theory is already built by Thales. In terms of you combine them in various ways. And then you can produce all the other properties. Now this is the way how, for example, Anaximenes has built his theory. And this I find very, very interesting theory for the one of the important reasons that all other theories before him are not quantifiable. Whereas Anaximenes' theory is quantifiable. Because he gives some kind of a model where mathematics can play a role. Though he did not give you a mathematical theory in the sense that he did not write any equations, but he is, to my mind, I mean at least from the Greek history point of view, he is the person who defined the notion of density for the first time. Do you know who is the person who gave a quantitative measure of density? We'll come to that a little later. But keep in mind that there is a person who actually defines it also very nicely at a later point. But right now, that's what we are at this place. So Anaximenes is our third interesting character who actually comes out with a theory of this kind. Now comes our friend. Your name is?
Sandeep.
Sandeep. So Sandeep is our Heraclitus today. So according to Sandeep, okay, he doesn't like any of these things. He says when you are talking about apparent and real, fine, but it is very important to find out what is apparent and what is real. So there is one way Anaximenes thought, let the underlying reality be unchanging. Okay? And the other way around, should be changing. But why not we take up the other way around, which is that let consider change as what happens, what is always there, and that is what is real. So what is the apparent thing here?
Unchanging.
That is to think that I am one, I am the same person. To think that I am the same person, that is identity. Like unchanging means identity. Something that is constant. So he says that our belief that there are certain constant things in the world is an illusion, is apparent. The reality is that everything is changing. In fact, what he says is that the change is what is out there. You perceive identities because you are constructing the identities yourself. So what he says is that experience is always like that. You must have heard about Heraclitus' poem. One of the poem actually says that you can't step into the same river twice. And that was Heraclitus. You must have heard this sentence several times.
Ten poem also. Ten poem matlab, you cannot put your leg in twice.
So you are also changing and the river is also changing. What he is trying to say is that reality is like a flow of a river. Okay, it keeps changing, it's moving. And now your relation with that river has changed, therefore you are not the same anymore. Why? Because earlier you had relation with some other point, and now you have a relation with some other point, therefore you are also not the same person anymore. So in that sense, everything is in flux. So that is the point of departure. If everything is in flux, then this whole idea of talking about, you know, substances having some kind of an identity, such as some air, some fire, and some thing, you say it's all, these are all your appearances, these are all your constructions. Reality at the very core is always changing. So that was the kind of idea of this guy, Heraclitus. And then there is another person called Parmenides. And Parmenides disagrees with Heraclitus. He says everything is one. Many is illusion. So many is apparent, one is real. Now, as you could see, it is possible for you theoretically to construct theories either way and be consistent with each other. Not consistent with each other, consistent within itself. That means it is possible for you to construct a Heraclitus kind of a theory. In fact, people have done that. Have you heard about Whitehead?
Right.
Whitehead. You heard about Bertrand Russell?
Yeah.
Bertrand Russell and Whitehead together wrote a famous book called the Principia Mathematica.
What?
Principia Mathematica, Principles of Mathematics.
It was written by Newton.
They also wrote the same title. And this is by Bertrand Russell and Whitehead. And Whitehead is very well known for his theory, which is very similar to Heraclitus' notion. And that is called the process-based modeling. It says that what exists are events. So give me events. So the whole model of the cosmos has to be of events, not things. Because things don't exist. Events exist. Because what is a phenomena after all? A phenomena has to be an event. Can you think of any phenomena which is not an event? then what is this thing? Is it an event? Is bottle an event? In what sense can bottle be an event? Of events. Why? Because everything that is happening here, some changes are happening inside the matter. It's radiating. Right? There are some forces acting on it. Okay? The body is responding to those forces. Right? So if you start looking at it, then what happens? Your worldview is that events are primary. Things are secondary. Things are constructed. Therefore, things are apparent. Events are real. And that is called the event-based ontology. So is it possible to think that the events are the basic ones? And that's what Heraclitus says. So Heraclitus says that change essentially means events. So he builds an entire ontology out of events as the basic stuff of the world. So all the things, all those illusions that you have about the things being there is all your illusion. So then the interesting thing is that, now Parmenides says that look here, it's all your figment of imagination. It's because of the way you are made. It's because the only source of your access is experience. And since experience can access only events, you think that events are primary. So which means that since you are thinking that the access to knowledge is only experience, that's the belief that experience is the basis of your knowledge. And because of that, you are stuck with this idea. Apply your reason. You'll see that everything is one. So he says that the reason is the most important thing, not the experience. So he brings out a kind of a distinction between reason and experience. So Parmenides comes out with this idea of reason and experience. So as you could see, you know, there are several themes that are emerging. So we started with certain things like change, and then we talked about substance and form. We talked about reality and appearance, and we are now talking about reason and experience. More such themes will emerge as we are unfolding the story. Now these are, in a sense, a kind of bricks using which now we are trying to narrate all these stories. These are the bricks of interpretation. Because as I told you already, all thing that we are doing in this history of science course is interpretation. And that interpretation needs certain concepts. And we are using these concepts to interpret. So the concepts that we have used so far to interpret are form and substance. We have used reality and apparent. We have used reason and experience. And yes, compression and refraction is another kind of interpretation of nature, because the nature can be interpreted in those things. Now Parmenides is also trying to interpret in terms of one or many. So is reality one or many? So his reply of course is one. And Heraclitus' response is many. So he says that, Heraclitus says that there are so many things out there. So many is reality. One is not reality. One is your construction. So in that sense, depending on whether you base your thing on reason or experience, okay, depending on whether you think that thing is the real thing, or the events are the real thing. So what you get out of all these things is that it is possible to do physics by starting with a thing and its changing states, changing properties. But you can also do physics by not even talking about the thing at all, but only talk about the events, and then you talk about other things. Now we are coming to a very important thing. Now this looks like a very, very difficult problem to solve. Then how do you get all these things out? This looks like a real muddle. It's a very complex thing, and by looking at all these things, you think that, you know, all this kind of discourse is just useless because it only confuses you. Somebody says one and somebody says many, and both the stories look all right for me. And somebody says reason is the source of all knowledge, and someone says experience is the source of all knowledge, and then that also is like a confusion. And then earlier we also had that kind of problems, and someone said that there are four elements, someone says that no, all these four elements must be reduced to one something undifferentiated thing, and then only from that you can bring out everything else. So we had so many stories of them, and it all looks very, very complicated. And here comes an interesting idea. I will talk about the idea and not the people here, because there are a lot of them. Initially, of course, you can think of Democritus, Leucippus, the people who are part of the atomistic school, because there are many people who have been proposing this atomism. So we'll take the idea of atomism. Now, how idea of atomism reconciles the fight between Heraclitus and Parmenides? So one is saying that flux is reality, change is reality. Okay, reality is always many. And the other person is saying one is reality, permanence is reality, change is not reality. So this is how you have got two different kinds of views. Now atomist says, I agree with both of you. Both of you are my friends. I agree with you as well as with you. Heraclitus, you are right. Parmenides, you are also right. I have a solution. I will make you friends. Come, let's have a chat. So he takes them to the canteen, and then he gives them chai, and then settles the dispute in the following way. He says, let us suppose that the ultimate thing that exists, whatever that thing be, okay, be permanent. That is, let us assume that the substance is permanent. Okay, let us call it atom. Alright, and now he says that to that extent, Parmenides, you are right. That the ultimate substance with which the whole world is made of is one. You are right. And then he says, and turns to Heraclitus and says, that look, what you are saying is also correct. It is a, changes do happen. Changes are the ones that are actually happening. But then how do you reconcile this? So do you know what is the, how is the change possible? He says that changes can be explained in terms of the combinations and separations of those atoms. So you accepted that there is something very permanent, like an atom. So you must assume that there is some substance, whatever that substance be, and that substance has to be in many. So in that sense, what he says, Parmenides, you are wrong in one thing, but you are right in something else. What you are right is that substance has to be permanent, it must have an identity. So give me a substance that has some identity. Okay, I want to call it an atom. And then he says, you are not right in saying that that substance will be only one. In that sense, Heraclitus is right. So Heraclitus, you are right. The world is many things. So give me many things that have the same identity, that is same substance. So now what you have a large number of things which have the same identity. So whatever that atom be, whatever that atom consists of, an atom essentially would mean that it doesn't it can be broken down any further. It's almost like the same way how the concept of epyron was constructed. It's an undifferentiated thing. Undifferentiated means undivisible. You can't divide it anymore. That was the original conception of an atom. So you started with something like that, and now all that you have to do is you can combine them in many ways. So how do you get now everything that you want out of one thing? So just do a small thing and come out with your theories. Explain how, given any one substance, that is as in an atomic form. I'll give you a substance with an atomic form, and I give you the operation. What is the operation?
Combination
and separation. So how will you conduct your model? How will you construct your model? There are several ways in which you can construct this model, but try to construct this model now. Pardon? Okay.
And if we use two rarefaction, then we let liquid. Means if we increase the distance between the atoms, and if we increase it more, we let gas.
So you are actually applying two different theories in one model. You are applying condensation and rarefactions as well as combinations and separations. Okay, so any other ideas? Any other ideas? Atomism is available to us in several ways. Atomism is available as in chemistry, as in, you know, there are atoms of earth, there are atoms of fire, there are atoms of water, and so on. That means you have four different atoms. That is one way of doing it. So if you say first of all that there are four different kinds of atoms, then you are accepting that there are four different kinds of substances, because of which, and then you can create different combinations of them. Suppose an atom of air combines with three atoms of water, you will get one molecule, and that molecule means another substance. So these substances of course are derived from the basic substances. So then you have all kinds of permutations and combinations out of these four, then you can produce all the variety of the world. So ultimately what is important is that variety means many. That's what, whenever we are saying many, what we actually mean is the variety. Because variety is something that requires explanation. So you have to explain how many things can be produced out of the ultimate basic stuff. So what are the other ways in which the atomism can be built? Because, see, the issues here of course is that some of them think that, you know, substance is a very important thing, like as is the case with Democritus, for example. So Democritus thought that let us assume that there can be an atom. But then another person called Empedocles was also an atomist. So what Empedocles said, we have to think of four different atoms as a basis. So corresponding to earth, air, water and fire, he has four different atoms, and based on that he started constructing his atomic theory. But then there are other people like the famous Pythagoras. Pythagoras was also an atomist. But then Pythagoras liked the way how Anaximenes solved the problem. So for Pythagoras, substance makes no sense. It's a form that makes sense. Therefore, he started building everything out of arithmetic, because arithmetic is a form after all. Now what he started building different kinds of numbers. Do you know the various kinds of numbers that Pythagoras is talking about? No? So maybe what you could do is have a quick lunch today and then spend your post-lunch session before your chemistry lab in the History of Science exhibition. Okay, read all the panels. There are just two panels on Greek theory, the Greek part of it. They're right in the beginning. Okay, as soon as you enter, you look at a very large panel, look at that one. Okay, there you will see some examples of all these things that I've been talking about. In fact, what we have discussed so far is most of the things on the first panel. Most of the things that we talked about today are already been there. You will be able to see those examples there. And from there you will see something about Pythagoras. So what Pythagoras does, give me an atom. Atom is essentially means one. Just any point. Just anything out there. And then from that he will be able to construct various kinds of numbers. He constructs different kinds of series, arithmetic progression. Different kinds of arithmetic progressions have been calculated. And he says, this is how you can make combinations of the given atom, whatever that atom be. And he says, that is how I will be able to come out with different kinds of numbers. And each number has a property. Prime numbers have different properties. Non-prime numbers have different properties. Some of the numbers can be divided, some of the numbers cannot be divided. And then he builds out, you know, different kinds of things. There are triangular numbers, there are square numbers. So those are the things that you will be able to extract from Pythagoras. So that is how, what he did is that, give me an atom and that atom be a number, something like an integer. And then I will be able to construct the whole world. And when he is saying that, he took the form as the most important thing. So just by changing the relationship between the things that are there, you will be able to construct different substances. So again, what he is saying is that substance is actually an illusion. What is underlying is all mathematics. So that's actually one of the reasons why Pythagoras was also considered a very brilliant atomist, but then a mathematical atomist. So in that sense, what you have here is that you have two kinds of atomism, mathematical and physical. So in mathematical atomism, you have two great figures. Sorry. In mathematical atomism, one of the most important was Pythagoras. Well, how do you spell Pythagoras? Let us assume this is the, it could be, is it correct?
Yes.
Okay, fine. That's what I thought. And then who is the other person? Can you tell me? He's a very popular figure. Of course, Pythagoras was also popular.
Plato.
Right. Plato and Pythagoras were mathematical atomists. So they have built their atomists, but they are mathematical atomists. Now, what about the physical atomists? I'm making a mistake here. So what are the physical atomists? We said the famous Democritus. Then Empedocles and Lysippus. And there are many other points. I mean, all of them actually were generally writing. See, whenever they were writing, except for Plato, in most of these people around that time, whenever they were writing poetry. Plato wrote in prose, but all others generally were writing most of their things as poems. So Democritus, Leucippus, and even Anaximander, Anaximenes, and things like that. Of course, we don't have the original access to all of them. But today, if at all we know anything about them, it's all because of Aristotle and Plato. Because we have access to most of the Greek thinkers from the writings of Aristotle and Plato. With a little bit of pieces here and there that are provided by other people, but most of the knowledge about the Greek things that we know about today are actually coming from Aristotle and Plato's writings. Some people said that they have original writings of Leucippus here and there in some museums, but otherwise, but then they are also being republished by Plato, because these poems are written in Aristotle's works as well. The poems were available in some of the Plato's works and Aristotle's works. So what is the characteristic features of the atomism? I mean, because we have to take stock of whatever has happened so far and try to see how these various models have been constructed. So before we depart, we'll have to understand the features of atomism. What are the features of atomism? There are two kinds of ways in which atomism can be looked at, apart from mathematical and physical. And that is, whether atom can be one or atom can be many. That is, how many kinds of atoms do you admit in your ontology? When you are building a model, how many basic atoms do you want to agree? So how many atoms do we have today in the modern sense of the term? Theoretically, there can be more, but in actually, how many we have about?
114.
Some of them are artificially constructed.
113.
So this is the, so today's atomism essentially requires you to have many, not one. Many atoms, but actually, do we really have atoms in the original sense of the term?
No.
You don't. Why? Because original sense of the term atom is undifferentiated. It cannot be divided. But today's atom can be divided. Or some of the original people thought that while the atoms can be undivided, but then each one comes with one property. And that was another kind of empedism. And that is what, for example, Empedocles believed in, that kind of atomism. So there is fire atom, there is water atom, there is earth atom, and things like that. So from that kind of model, he built the whole stuff. Of course, they had a lot of problems while dealing with this kind of an atomism. And that, of course, was, like, for example, if that was the case, then how would earth become ice? Water become ice? Because they do see the possibility that something like a metal can be molten and becomes a liquid. So then what is happening? Is the atoms transforming from one to the other? What does that mean? That means that substances can transform from one substance to another substance. Because if you really strongly believe that there are two different kinds of atoms, or three different kinds of atoms, or four different kinds of atoms, and you do see that liquids become solids, what does it mean? So it means that it is possible for transmutation of elements. So transmutation of elements is possible. So in which case, there is a possibility how the precious metals can be produced from any other thing. So that was the origin of alchemy. That means if you actually believe that these elements can be transformed from one to the other, that means you just need to know how to do it. Once you know it, you'll be able to produce gold in plenty. So from non-gold to gold, transformation is possible. And that produces the major project, possibly that was the longest historical project ever in the spirit of science, that is how to produce gold given anything other than gold. That's alchemy, but that alchemy is not a non-scientific project after all, because all chemistry comes from alchemy. All the methods, all the experiments, all the experimental and technical developments that happen, all different kinds of material knowledge that we have, everything comes from alchemists. So alchemists have told us so many things about material science, that all the knowledge about that we have about material science has all come from alchemists. But then their goal was something different. But nonetheless, that was the kind of thing. So this is how, you know, atomism, the belief in this kind of substance and the belief in this kind of theories have led to different projects, the mathematical projects, the chemical projects. There are also, of course, the geometrical projects that we'll see. We'll see that later, when how many of the people actually thought of looking at the whole world in terms of space. Some people looked at the world in terms of numbers, some people looked at the world in terms of space and tried to characterize everything in terms of space. And we'll look at many of those aspects as we progress. Okay, now what I would do is I would spend a little amount of time towards the end to talk about a little bit about how you're going to work on the site. Anyone who takes a membership can create various kinds of things. Okay, so what are the things that you can do? Once you log in, for example, now I will log in. I'm logging as admin. But actually what I will do is, when I'm contributing to the course and not managing the website, I will not log in as admin. I will log in as Nagarjun. Similarly, all of you, when you log in with your own name. Then what happens is, you go to your area, and then you'll be able to, you get a menu like this. Okay, there you can add lot of things. So of course, don't worry about other things. You can add a file, you can add a page. So I request all of you to add pages. So all that you have to do is just add pages. So if you have a question, add a page, or write your question. That is good enough for us. And then these pages have at the bottom something called reply to a page. So essentially, when you are writing a question, don't just write the question. Always write something that is elaborate that question a little bit. Like what is the context? Why you got that question? So something like this. Be a little more descriptive. And then at the end, for example, you had a question, right? And he had a question, and the question was that is there a contradiction between the theory of general theory of relativity and quantum mechanics? Of course, you may think that that question is not related to what we are discussing, but that is not the meaning of what he is saying. Of course, is that are these two inconsistent ways of solving the world? Because both of them are physics. Both of them are two deep ways in which physics can be done. So there are people still who are trying to solve the grand theory of unification in one particular way using general theory of relativity model. There are other people who try to put together quantum physics as well as the gravitational theories and come out with quantum gravity and things like that. There are some people who are continuously doing quantum physics way of doing and looking at the whole world. So in that sense, the kind of issues that we have discussed today have some relationship to what you are actually doing as a physicist. So there is some kind of a models that you have to bring in. So a question like this cannot be directly just asked like that. You have to give some kind of a reference to why you think this is an important question. In what way does it relate to the kind of things that we discussed in your class? And then what happens? All of you can reply to him directly. What you think is the way, what you're talking about. So there is a possibility to discuss about all these things. So how do you do that? So as you could see, whatever you write towards the end, you can add your comments. So once you log in, you'll be able to add comments about it. So you can, as you can see, there is some kind of a comment. Niranjan has written something about it here. Okay, so I ask you, all of you, to write something about it. You can put your comments about it right there. Suppose you are to discuss about what happened in the first class. Okay, then you can just write a page about it, and then other people will be talking about it. So think about adding your pages is almost like writing your own blogs or whatever. So here, each of you will be writing, whenever you write, and you log in and you write, add your pages, those pages will be in your folder. When I write a reply, those replies will be attached to that page. So that is how you're going to work. If you need, for example, an image to support your question or support your page, while you're writing the page, you can also put that image there. Or you want to do a diagram and then put it out there, you can also do it there. So all those things are possible. So let us see how you'll be able to work, and if you have any other ways in which you want to do it, you can also, you're also encouraged to do it that way. And if you have any problems while you're working with the website, you can always contact us by just clicking on the contact. Or all of you have my email already, so you can send me an email if you face any problems there. And do contribute questions in various ways, because all your questions will be aggregated together, and we look at the quality of those questions, and also how you write the question, how you formulate the question, because sometimes the formulation of the question already contains sometimes answers. Or sometimes what happens is your assumptions are clear in your question. So that is why the questions are very important, and the art of asking questions is also very important. And because this is a course in humanities and not in science, we also want you to encourage the culture of asking questions. And that's why, so please, that doesn't mean that science doesn't require you to ask questions. So, but in any case, the reason why we have a course like this is also to give you the proper perspective in a science course. So you have to get down to some of these things. So if you want to access the audio recordings of my lecture, just click on the lectures, you will be able to access the audio files.
Can we download them?
Yes, you can download them. You can download them. So the last two lectures were there. Today's two lectures I will put down after I get back to my place. So you'll be able to, so if you think that, you know, there is something terribly missing or something like that, or you want to formulate a question after listening to me again or something like that, you will be able to do it. So anyway, so the most of these resources will be accessible to you, and if you think that some other important thing is there, you can always do it. One more thing before I do it, when you are doing this add new, always also try to add links. So one of the most important things that you can do is that add links to each lecture, each topic. What are those links? Maybe a page in Wikipedia which is relevant to our course, or some other website that you saw is something that is relevant to our course. So you have been doing research and then you find that there is an interesting link. So contribute links also. So you can contribute links, you can contribute questions, or you can contribute a link and a question about that link. That means something that you read in that link. Okay, so this particular way of doing this particular course is because it's open. We can do it in so many ways. So explore, read, ask questions, seek answers, and if someone asks a question, you can also read that question. Therefore, don't expect that someone is going to answer. It is possible that you may yourself want to answer those questions. So there is a possibility of collaborative discussion that may happen on this page. So I request all of you to join there and participate in that question. And as I told you already, as soon as you write something, if you don't want that question to be seen by other people, you can keep it private. But if you want other persons to see it, you'll have to make it published. So change it to published after you write. Okay, that is very important. So if any more questions, we'll address it in the next class.
Back to Anupama.
Why don't they give one remote here?
She said it's with the workshop people.
Even in 217 they have not kept remote.